the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, cleared for the option.
All right, welcome to VFR. Exchange approved, 4 mic alpha. Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 mic alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold the shuttle on the 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 3-2-1, Mike, and it will be downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 8 of the In the Pattern Podcast. I am your host, Chris, and along with me in the virtual hangar is John and Mark Lacoste in California. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, y'all.
All right. We have an S-ton to catch up on. A little bit has happened to or with each of us since the last time, episode 7 Alpha and Bravo. And man, that was a great episode. Sure to appreciate those guys coming on with us and talk and give us a lot of tips for the upcoming test, either both written and or the check ride. Speaking of that, I would like to get right into it. Everybody already knows. Why don't you go ahead and tell us how that went, John?
It was one hell of a long day.
How about a long week?
Yeah, it was a very long week.
Leading up to it.
I've never studied so hard for anything. Even in college, I never studied that hard. But I guess it paid off because by the end of the flight, the DPE was shaking my hand and congratulating me on being a private pilot. So
that's all that counts. How was you know what part is going to scare me the most? It's got to be that face-to-face question answer session. I'd like to really know how that went.
That was the better part.
Really? Versus the flying?
Yeah, and so
of course you did study a lot for the written and you scored really well, a 95, right?
I did a 95 on the written, yes.
I mean, so you're prepared.
Yeah, it was after having the question and answer with my instructor for the previous, you know, week and a half, I felt a lot better after that. Having gone through a lot of the questions, I was still nervous because my instructor was asking me everything. We didn't even cover half of that stuff in the oral, obviously, because it's only 2 hours instead of, you know, the 8 hours that we studied for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was I guess I'll just go through the whole thing piece by piece here. So I showed up at 7 a.m. And then I was the first one there, which worked out pretty well because I hadn't been able to get a brief yet. So I caught up the briefer, got the brief for the flight. Right as I hung up, the DPE showed up in his state police car. Cause he's a trooper and, so
no pressure there at all.
Yeah, no. I had heard that a lot of times he shows up in his uniform with the gun and everything, but he actually didn't this time.
Interesting.
So, you know, he gets out of the car and, you know, we introduce each other and ourselves and said something about the weather. And he's like, all right, you know, we'll get to that in a few minutes. So he gets in. We sit down and he starts basically going over step by step what's going to happen that day. How it was going to go, how the order we were going to do stuff, what to kind of expect, what he was going to do, you know, the roles each of us play. Obviously, I'm PIC, you know, that kind of thing. He basically, you know, he says, look, if the weather isn't good or something like that, he's like, you know, if you make the decision early, he's like, I'll give you a monetary reward, essentially, by not charging for something extra when we come back to do the flight. He said, but if you get out to the plane or if we go up and we have to turn around, he's like, you know, still good job on saying, you know, we can't go and making that decision. But I would have liked to have you have made that on the ground before we went, you know. So he kind of outlaid that. And I was like, OK, got that. So then we went right into verifying my logbook, making sure everything was good. So probably an hour for the whole brief. Whole checking my logbook, checking all my stuff, making sure all the applications were in and everything. The FAA application thing, is a pain in the ass. But made sure everything was good. Everything was. So we started with the oral. A couple minutes later, my instructor showed up with the logbook, the aircraft logbook, because he had to have that. Because we had to get that from the maintenance guys, which took a couple days, because apparently the maintenance guys had just been that week audited by the FAA.
Oh.
Which I guess works out, because it meant that the logbooks had to be good.
Yeah, they would have been up to date at that point.
Since they had to be audited. So, you know, anyway, we get right into the oral. And I think by the time the brief had gone and I'd been talking to him for a little bit, I was a lot calmer. I wasn't nervous anymore, at least for the oral portion. So, you know, he just basically, he does it. He doesn't do it like a question answer session. It's a lot more of, he'll give me scenarios. He'll give me, you know, these different things. And basically I have to answer my way out of it. You know,
you remember anything specific?
You know what? I'll tell you what, let me bring up the email I sent to my instructor, cause I had to write up what a lot of the stuff was. Since I was actually the first private pilot he sent for his check ride.
Really?
Yeah, I was the first one he sent to Mike to do a check ride.
Oh,
so
okay.
That made it interesting because, you know, my instructor's nervous. I'm nervous. You know, the DPE knows that I'm the first one going through. So it was interesting just in that respect. But let's see, what do we start out with? I think some of it was like, we started out with like head colds. Basically
high pressure system in your head.
Yeah. He's just like, all right. So he's like, you know, you wake up you know, you're feeling a little stuffy. You know, you go take some Benadryl or something. He's like, you know what, you going to fly that day? And I was like, no, you're not going to fly. You know, first of all, you took Benadryl, which knocks most people out.
Yeah, my wife uses it as a sleeping aid.
That's what my mom does, too.
My wife is a nurse. Like,
I was going to say, your wife's a nurse, right?
And works nights. So, you know, it makes it difficult to sleep during the day sometimes. So,
you know, he gives me that. And I was like, nah, you know, you took the Benadryl plus head cold. You just don't want to go up the head cold. You know, and I explained a couple of the different reasons why. And, you know, he says, okay, well, you don't take the Benadryl. He's like, do you still fly? And he does scenarios like that. Then he went into something like, all right, you're flying at 7,000 feet. He says, your passenger has a slight headache. Stomach's feeling a little uneasy. You know, what do you do? And I immediately thought, you know, stomach uneasy, well, must be motion sickness. I was like, so look at something. Open the vents, you know.
Get some air to him.
Get some air to them, mm-hmm. You know, make sure they're focusing on pointing out on the horizon, something like that. And then he's like, well, what about that headache? Does that make you kind of worried a little bit? And then I was like, ah, carbon monoxide. And he's like, yeah. And then, you know, we went over that kind of thing. So, you know, he kind of puts you in these little scenarios. And
that's interesting.
He'll kind of follow a scenario too. And then occasionally it'll lead to like direct questions. Like, when do you need oxygen? Okay, well, 12,500 to 1,400 if you're for more than 30 minutes, that kind of thing. You know, we went through all the aeromedical factors, alcohol. Him being a state trooper, he asked me if a state trooper comes up to your plane and knocks on the door and says, hey, give me a breathalyzer test. You know, you're required to take it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea. I was like, I'd assume so. And he's like, yeah, you would. you know, we went over V speeds, you know, kind of define those, define maneuvering speed.
Specific to your aircraft.
Yeah, kind of what was it, you know, and then I stated the numbers too because I knew what they were. And, you know, I don't necessarily know because I just threw it in there if he was looking for that or not. But, mm-hmm. You know, whenever we're weight and balance, just kind of basically nose heavy, tail heavy, how does that affect things? He checked, we went over my flight plan, my weight and balance, kind of looked those over, made notes on that. And, He actually said, he's really glad that I put the zero weight, the zero fuel weight, and the takeoff and landing weight. And this is something I hadn't thought of. It was just on the sheet that I had filled out. Mm-hmm. But the reason he wants the zero fuel weight is you get diverted or you have to circle before you get to your destination. You know, you lose more fuel than you were expecting. You know, you want to make sure that your zero fuel weight is within the CG as well. So I had never thought of it that way.
Are you talking about on the form you use for your flight plan?
Well, there's a little form that we have at the flight school that I had filled out for that just does the weight and balance. So I had it there.
Oh, okay.
Because it's easy to go by, but you know, he made a good point with calculate your zero fuel weight because it may come in handy. I actually learned a lot in the oral. I learned so much in the oral. I felt sometimes I learned more than I actually told him throughout the whole day, which I guess is, you know, shows that it was going really well. And I know last week when we were talking about it with Mark and Doug, they were saying the same thing, and it was just so true that you just learned so much in your check ride.
Yeah, they say you're supposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not there just to grill you and see what you know, but there's, from what I've heard, you know, they want the feeling that they've taught you something at the end of the day too.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that. I'm trying to think of something else in particular. There's just a bunch. You know, we went over, gone over my cross country, why I picked some of the points. You know, while I'm doing that, he's asking me to point stuff out in the map.
So previous to that, he gave you the destination?
Yeah, he said make a flight plan to Norfolk.
Okay.
So I did that and had everything there. And then we just kind of started going down. He's like, all right, so let's look at your flight plan. I was like, well, first I go here and then I go here because I like, you know, I took this first point because I've been there before, you know, it's familiar. And he's like, yeah, it's a good thing to, you know, fly through stuff that's familiar. Especially at the beginning of a flight,
mm-hmm.
You know, and then he started asking me about some airspace while we're going through that, throwing in weather minimums while he's doing it. You know, he threw me in a scenario. Okay. You're at this one airport that has a class E ceiling of 700 feet, you know, above the airport. Do you do the traffic, you know, can you fly in a traffic pattern at 600 feet with 700 foot ceilings? You know, it kind of puts you in that scenario. And I'm like, well, technically you're above the minimum because you're not over a densely populated area and you're in class E, G during the day. So yeah, technically you can, you just have to be clear of clouds. And he's like, but would you? And I was like, nah. He's like, good, because you got the class E above you. He's like, there's IFR traffic there. He's like, and it's probably a class E above you because you got instrument approaches in there. And I learned a lot about instrument approaches and why, you know, the class E is the way it is from that too, which was cool.
Hmm. So what was the question about how or what would the pattern be? How high would it?
He was saying basically you're flying at 600 feet.
Pass. Man, I would that'd be weird flying a pattern of, assuming you're at sea level.
Which it would have been there.
Right, doing a, you know, because I think my pattern's 2,500, you know, but still 1,000 feet over, you know, AGL for me. So you're doing 600 feet AGL for a whole pattern. That would feel...
Essentially.
That would feel weird and maybe fast. I don't know. Because you're that much closer to the ground, you know?
Yeah. But he was basically looking for, you know, are you legal to do that? And I was like, technically, yes. Would I? No. Hell no. I'd never do that.
Yeah. I guess there's several things that would fall into the category of technically you could, but would you? Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that in the oral. It was like, okay, you can do these things, but would you and why wouldn't you?
Because I'd like to live to fly till tomorrow at least.
Yeah. So, you know, basic And the oral basically followed everything that, you know, you mostly hear, you know, whenever the aircraft log books, you know, the different inspections you have to have. You know, I described the plane, the engine, you know, we went over the equipment lists. I did learn something else there with the POH has that equipment list in it, the comprehensive equipment list that states everything you can put in the plane. What I had never noticed before was that some of them are designated R and some of them are designated O, as in required or optional equipment. I had actually never looked at that chart very well, because I mean, the equipment list for the plane is in the weight and balance. So I never really looked at the comprehensive one. And he kind of showed me that, because he's like, well, you look at the FAR 205, you know, the equipment list there, the minimum equipment list, if you have one, you've got the POH that you can look at, you've got the requirements for airspace, you know, if you need the mode C transponder. He's like basically gone through all the, how you look to see if that piece of equipment is required for the flight. And if not, then you mark it as an op. You know, so we went over that kind of extensively. You know, went over all the weather, all the charts. Yeah, it was, you know, fairly standard from what I heard. It was nothing I didn't really expect, which I guess is good. So pretty much everything we talked about last week was pretty true.
And helpful, obviously, yeah.
It was really helpful. So, you know, nothing really caught me by surprise. Actually, what did catch me by surprise is I never opened a book.
Oh, during the oral?
Yeah. At one point, he opened the POH to show me the equipment list, right?
Mm-hmm.
To kind of lead me to answer the right question. But, like, I never myself said, I don't know, let me open the book. Like, I knew most of the stuff he was saying, or it was something I didn't know the answer to, but wasn't like the breathalyzer test. Like, I didn't really know where you would look for that as far as a P91, I guess. But I think that's actually a state thing or something. I forget what he said. But yeah, I never really opened the books.
So did he hit you with any FAR AIM regulations?
Yeah, I mean, there was some, nothing in particular off the top of my head.
General, nothing goofy.
Yeah, nothing goofy. Most of it's stuff you know, you have to know for other things, you know, like minimum altitudes and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or required equipment or, yeah, so that was pretty much the oral. It took about 2 hours total, plus the hour in the beginning to do the administrative stuff and all that, and the brief and that kind of thing. So by about three, oh, and then the last thing he did was he did have me go on the FAA website. He brought it up, and I did the 10-question runway signs test.
Okay.
Actually, their site went down in the middle of it. But it came back up. So, I finished that. I got a 10 out of 10 on that. And so from there, I got an abbreviated briefing, which I had never done before. I didn't realize that they basically want you to tell them what you want updated.
Oh, yeah.
It's not
I've always did a standard brief, too, so I don't even know.
Yeah, so I had done the standard earlier in the morning, and I was like, all right, let me get an abbreviated update. And he's like, oh, well, what do you want? And I was like, I guess winds aloft, any new air mets, you know, that kind of thing. And that kind of caught me off guard a little bit, because I had never done the abbreviated before. I just thought it was, I don't know. I didn't even know what I thought. I just knew it gives you, updated weather, since things that have changed since you got your original brief.
Mm-hmm.
So I got that. I came back, and basically at that point it was, do we go or do we not? You know, you looked at the weather. What do you think? And I said, well, it's a little windy. there was some like 12, 15 knot gusts at the airport. But nothing that I felt was over my limit. So I said, let's go. It's not that bad. I've flown in much worse. And I know I can handle that. So from there, I went out and pre-flighted the plane. Actually, he let me go pre-flight, and then met up with me after I pre-flighted and kind of asked me questions about what I was looking for in the pre-flight and what I did. But he didn't actually like follow me during the pre-flight, which I thought he would, but he didn't. And we pulled it out and got in and started it up. And I'll have, I have the whole audio that I've edited. You can hear some of it. It was a little funky, but I'll actually post that with the post when we put out this podcast. But,
cool. I'll be anxious to listen through that.
Yeah, I've condensed it down to about an hour and 13 minutes. We did put 1.8 hours on the plane for the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. So how'd that go? You took off. You headed for your first checkpoint. How far did you get before he diverted you?
So we took off, did a soft field first. It's part of the airport. I went to my first checkpoint was Hart Miller, which is like 3 minutes away. Which is a good point because it gets you kind of oriented depending on which runway you take off of. It's like, it's never quite the right time. Just because, you know, I've measured from the center of the airport, not downwind for 3-3. So anyway, we get there, we go to my next checkpoint, which happened to be Rock Hall. And then I started getting everything set up to go to my third checkpoint, and that's when he diverted me. So he diverted me to Bay Bridge Airport, which was about 12 miles, I want to say. So I did a quick, okay, I know Bay Bridge is there, you know, look at the chart. I'm like, I need to basically go in that direction, figured out the distance, throw on the autopilot, which was a big help in that case. It's like, the autopilot's flying the plane, let me figure out where I need to go real quick, and then I can turn the autopilot off. So, you know, figured out the time it would take, how much fuel we would use.
Did you just have it follow a heading bug off your VOR?
I just had it follow the heading bug on the directional gyro.
Oh, okay.
And just hold the altitude.
Mm-hmm.
Which was pretty nice, because then I could just figure everything out real quick without having to worry about keeping the plane steady, because it was a little windy. I mean, it was a little bumpy.
So now you pull out your chart. And
well, I had the chart out in front of me.
Yeah,
so I basically, I pulled out the E6B, which I have the ASA aluminum one, which, so nice of them, has a little scale on the side. So you just pull it out and you can measure quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then throw in, I used the ground speed from what I had printed out in AOPA flight plan that morning to supplement my hand done flight plan. Since I had the more current winds from the morning instead of the one I did the night before. So I used the ground speed they calculated for that and said, all right, I'll be there in 7 minutes. I'll take a little less than a gallon of fuel. And so we made it there, flew over the airport. And he was like, okay, how would you enter the pattern from at this point? I said, all right, I'd go down the way a little bit and then I'd come around, descend, and then enter the pattern for 2-9. And he was like, okay, good. So we'll do 180 now and we'll start heading this direction. Then we did slow flight. He's like, all right, why don't you do your clearing turns while in slow flight, since we're not going to go either way in slow flight, you know, that'll be fine. So I started doing my clearing turns and then he had me do a power off stall in a turn. basically like your turn and base to final. What did we do then? Then he, was that when he pulled my engine the first time? I think it was. I think he pulled my engine. Then we did turns around a point. Then he pulled my engine again at 1,000 feet. Then we did the power on stall, did all our hood work. Then he had me track a VOR under the hood. And then we went to this little airport, Essex Sky Park. It's like an 1,800-foot runway. in the Delta for my airport. So we went in there, did the short field landing, did a short field takeoff, came back around. We were going to depart and go back to Martin State, and then he pulled my engine again, basically on a long base. So I had to dead stick it into Essex Sky Park.
Did you tell him you're going for a pilot's license with a powered plane, not a sailplane?
Yeah. I had known, this is one of the things I had known going into it, is that he was going to pull my engine a couple times. Because the previous week I think I flew more that previous week with the engine gone.
It's like, dude, I don't want a glider pilot license.
Yeah, every time they're pulling my engine left and right, I'm like, no. And then we get back on the ground and he's like, these things are really unreliable, aren't they? So I dead sticked it into Essex, bounced the crap out of that landing. Oh man, it was a rough landing, but I made it, which is the whole point there. Because we came in, I bounced, and I kind of started getting out of ground effect a little bit. And you know, when you get out of ground effect, you want to put in a little bit of power and then settle back down. So I immediately, my thought process is put in a little bit of power. So I go for it, and as I'm like about to reach for it, I'm like, I don't have it. Crap.
You're like, what are you grabbing for?
And then we kind of slammed down again and stopped. And he's like, well, he's like, you made it. He's like, if you can dead stick it in the Essex Sky Park, he's like, you'll be fine.
The plane's reusable.
Yeah. So from there, we left Essex, actually went back to Martin State this time. Got in the pattern, did a soft field landing, and taxi back.
Did you have your GPS going that time? Tracking your flight?
When did he give me? I do. The one from the iPad. I do have that.
Cool.
I can post that too.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, was he okay with you using the iPad in the cockpit while you were going?
I didn't. And I didn't even bother.
Okay.
Reason being, I haven't quite figured out how to use it in the cockpit yet. Yeah. I use it like crazy for pre-flight, but I just haven't quite figured out where it fits with the whole, you know, cross-country flying thing. I mean, I'm going to give it a shot this weekend, but, yeah, I didn't even bother. I just stuck on the GPS, threw it in the back and let it go. Now the GPS in the plane, he didn't give that to me. At least the map, the moving map, until when he gave that to me in, I think in the instrument time. We did that. Is when he gave that back to me.
When you were under the hood?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, was that more or less to make sure you weren't going to get into some airspace since you... Well, I don't know that.
Well, no,
you couldn't see outside to see landmarks. You might not know if you're going to be crossing into another airspace boundary. I don't.
Well, no, because he's basically keeping tabs on that for me. Because essentially, he's the safety pilot at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's telling me when I'm clear. You know, all that kind of stuff, and you know, I knew we weren't going into anything. But I forget why. There was a reason I needed to use it. What was that? There was a point I had to. I don't remember. You'll have to listen to the audio.
Do you have a lot of airports close to each other?
Not as many as you do.
Okay. This whole thing makes me real nervous. I don't know where they typically have you go and fly around, but and we'll get into this a little bit later, but. It's a lot of freaking work when there's airports every 10 miles and airspace is almost overlapping. It's a lot of freaking work. We'll get into it a little bit later, but please continue.
Yeah, it's a little bit, because when we go to the Eastern Shore, the other side of the bay, the Chesapeake Bay, it gets a lot less complicated over there. So we just kind of stick to that side. The thing that did catch me off guard is we didn't actually ever go into our normal practice area. we were kind of south of it, which was interesting.
So you were doing, is that where you were doing your turns around a point, your stalls and so forth?
Yeah, we did it all kind of south. It was, but it was kind of how it flowed. It was just so much different than any of my lessons had been. But it was kind of like once we started going, it was very just do this. Okay, I know how to do this. I'm going to do it. Did it. Cool. I wasn't really nervous once we took off. Like once it got started, he was pretty easy going with that. And then for half of the check ride, the first part, he was really quiet. And then about right after we did the diversion, he started talking more, but it was more in a, you know, you should keep this in mind when you're doing this, or maybe, you know, you should do this kind of stuff. He was starting to teach at that point.
Mm.
He did a lot of teaching on that flight. And let's see what else with the flight. Oh, so the fun part. We did a short field takeoff out of Martin State initially for the start of a flight. We go up, we hit the two checkpoints, we do the diversion, we do the 180, start setting up for slow flight. While I'm getting ready, getting everything situated, getting ready to do slow flight, I look over and then he's tapping on the flap handle. And I look at it and it's still at 10 degrees. And I was like, oh.
Oh, he's shit. Like,
he's like, good thing we didn't go above 110.
Oh.
I was like, yeah. I was like, I can't believe I. And then he stopped me. He's like, hey. He's like, keep going. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Just keep going. Because, you know, he had made a point at the beginning. He's like, I don't say it's unsatisfactory. You know, you're still in the game. He's like, I have to tell you as soon as you do something that's unsatisfactory. And then we can make the decision on to continue or not. So he didn't say anything. So it was like, all right, you know what? Put it behind me.
Mm-hmm.
I screwed that one up. But, you know, he kind of gave me a freebie on that one. I think the nerves, because I did it, because immediately after that, he's like, he's like, you did a really good soft field takeoff, too. Because he even said that when I did it. As soon as I did it, he's like, yeah, good job. So I think the fact that I executed everything but the flaps up after a couple hundred feet, he let me go on that one.
Well, you wanted that. So you were still climbing out at that point.
No, we had already climbed out. We had done half the cross country, done the diversion, come back around, and started doing the slow flight.
And you were still had your flaps in the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun.
Wow.
Holy crap. Wow.
That was very generous then, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd covered some distance, haven't you?
Yeah, I had.
Wow.
So apparently you didn't do your cruise checklist.
You know what? He didn't notice it. No. He didn't notice it until later either.
Otherwise, probably.
No, because he would have told you about it a lot sooner than, you know, 80 miles down the road, you know?
Yeah, he didn't notice it. And the cruise checklist actually doesn't have anything about the flaps. Because I did the cruise checklist. But that's part of the soft field maneuver, you know, the soft field takeoff. And I kind of wish I had a little more time to work on the soft field and the short field takeoff and landings before we did the check ride. But, you know,
I was going to say, that's one of the things I really want to work on. But I want to do it, I think, during the week when I know that either one of the airports isn't going to be maxed out.
Yeah.
Let me have the field to myself while I do this, you know, kind of thing.
I've only did two short field takeoffs. And one was the other night when I was doing those night stop and goes.
Wow.
The short field isn't bad. I like the soft field.
It's the same thing, isn't it? I mean, a notch of flaps and throttle and go.
Well, no, because the short field. Roll. Yeah, the soft field, it's elevator all the way back. You know, keep the weight off the nose wheel, and you continuously go. Don't stop or anything. And then as soon you pull it back, and when you have full power, and as soon as it hits off the ground.
Okay. Release the
pressure.
Keep
it in ground. No, you have to keep it in ground effect. You actually have to push down.
Yeah.
Keep it in ground effect, accelerate to VY, and then get out.
That's what I'm saying. Release the pressure forward. Stay in that ground effect. Okay.
And then the short field, you actually hold the brakes, stop, power up, and then let it go. And then you go up, you rotate to VX, and then as soon as you clear the obstacle, you go to VY. So,
yeah.
But that was my big kind of the one screw up I had. And, you know, I guess the thing was, is it was at the beginning of the flight. So at that point, the nerves were still kind of, I was still a little nervous there. But, yeah, I mean, it was pretty, other than that, it was a pretty good flight. I enjoyed it, actually. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it, but I did.
So it's 1.8 hours?
1.8 hours.
And how many landings? Was it two or three?
Three or four.
Hmm. So now let me back up a little bit. You said that you learned a lot from him. How did that come about? I mean, that he was actually going into teaching mode.
I don't know. It was just like as I was doing stuff, you know, he just started throwing stuff out there. So he's asking me questions, you know, I answer it, and then he elaborates more on it to kind of explain stuff more, or sometimes it'd be to lead me to an answer. I don't know. It just kind of happened.
That's cool. Sounds like you had a good DPE then.
Yeah, he was really good. I was a little nervous at first from everything I'd heard, but he was really good. I felt more comfortable with him than, you know.
Was there any contradiction between what he was teaching and what you had learned from any of your instructors?
No.
No? Good.
It's a lot of it was stuff I had never thought about or – yeah, it was
– just fine-tuning stuff?
Yeah, fine-tuning stuff, some new material, some stuff just – he's big on safety, so it was a lot of that kind of thing. You know, enhance the safety of everything. Yeah, it was. And I just edited the thing. I can't remember anything else. But, I mean, you can listen to it. And you can, for what you can hear a lot of it. And you'll see kind of partway through, it just starts kind of teaching on stuff. Which was cool. I mean, I did have a lot of fun on the flight. The other funny thing is when we came back, well, before we went out, my instructor came with me to the plane because he had another student gone up with him. So he had to get another plane ready too, but he preheated my plane while I did the,
pre-flight. What's this preheating thing you speak about?
Yeah.
Zing! Just joking.
Yeah, well, we made the engine warm.
You had someone over there going,
"No, we got a propane heater that blows hot air into the cow lung." So we heated that, but man, he was so nervous at that point. Like he was more nervous than I was before I got in the plane.
The DPE?
No, my instructor.
Oh, your instructor. Okay. I was going, damn.
Yeah. That's not good.
He's over there sweating. He's got two cigarettes going.
No, man. My instructor, because he preheated it for me while I was doing the pre-flight, and he was just so nervous.
Everything is a reflection back on him.
Yeah, and me being the first one, you know, yeah. He was really nervous for the whole thing. So that was kind of funny. So when we landed and we came back, and this is one of the things, I don't know if you can hear it or not. He, you know, we're taxiing back, and he had already come back with his student. So his student actually drove past us as we were taxiing back. And then we just look over and we see my instructor just pacing back and forth, like behind his car, because he sees us coming up. And the DPE is just like, oh, look at him, like a mother hen. And I was like, yeah, I was like, he was more nervous than I was before this. But it was funny because, you know, we stopped it and then he came over and he's like, I didn't do what he did. I guess he was pretty relieved. But when we got out, you know, I was walking around to get ready to push it back, and the DPU was still in the plane getting all his stuff together, getting ready to get out. And, you know, he's going over the flight and he mentioned the flaps. And as soon as he told my instructor about that, my instructor just looks back at me with this look like, what the hell were you thinking? And I just kind of shrugged. I was like, I got the ticket. So
job accomplished.
Yeah. You know, at that point I was like, yeah, I mean, I screwed that one up, but he shook my hand before I got out of the plane, which was cool. Yeah. That was nice. It really didn't hit me until we were taxiing back. You know, we stopped, cleaned up the plane. We started taxiing back. It really wasn't until then it hit me that the flight was over.
All done.
Cause you know, once the nerves went away, it was just just get the job done. Just do everything. I wasn't really thinking about the whole end at that point.
You're all good at that point, unless you tag a fuel truck or another plane on the taxi back, huh?
Yeah.
So now you said you had 1.8.
Yes.
Did it feel like it?
Or did it feel more like 2.8 or 3.8?
Yeah. Or did it just fly by? No pun intended, but.
No, it just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of happened. Like, I didn't really, I wasn't paying attention to time. I wasn't thinking about time. I didn't really feel much. No, I was just concentrating on everything so much. I don't really know if it felt like longer or shorter. I don't think it felt like shorter, but.
How many, did you see how much distance you covered in that time?
It was, I could tell you, if you give me a second, I can bring that up.
Wonder what it ended up being versus what you had planned, even though you diverted a course.
Well, what did I plan for? I don't even know what I planned for.
I wonder what, and your fuel mileage with your flaps down for half the flight. Did you recalculate for that one?
That was only the beginning.
Oh, it's just extra lift. Big deal.
Yeah. That just, oh, man. I still can't believe I did that.
You won't do it again?
I won't. That's for sure. 114 nautical miles.
Okay.
It's not too bad.
I had a max speed of 125 knots, and that was after the flaps were up. Average speed, get this one, average speed of 30.1 knots.
Jeez.
Wow.
That's because there was a lot of downtime from when I started this where it was just sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the graphs here. So distance 114 nautical miles. I think the whole trip was 100 and it's an hour and 45 minutes. It's 190, 170 miles, something like that. Wow. So I've got about an hour beforehand on the ground, and we went up. One, two, three. I only have three landings. Yeah.
Cool.
Are these stats that you're pulling out of something like
ForeFlight?
ForeFlight, thank you.
No, it's Motion X. It's what I use to track the GPS.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. You can see my first engine cut off from a high altitude. I climb back up. I do my turns around a point. Cuts my engine again. Then you can see when I land it. Essex the first time. We get up. Cuts my engine. I land again. And then we get back to Martins and land.
Good deal. Well, mission accomplished. A freshly minted pilot. Free to go. Terrorize the skies. Take passengers with you.
And I plan on it.
Avoid TFRs and stay out of the SFRA.
I don't have to stay out of the SFRA. I just choose not to go into it if I don't have to.
Well, based on some of the articles I've read lately, it's probably a good thing to just stay away for a while.
It's honestly not that bad. It's essentially like calling up to get flight following when you contact them. Sure. It's the same controllers. It's the big hassle is the fact that you have to, the biggest hassle is if you're taking off out of the SFRA, you've got to call them to get the squawk code beforehand.
Gotcha.
And that's the pain in the ass. And it's the extra flight plan you have to file. Other than that, it's actually not bad once you're in the air. Yeah. So, but yeah, I do plan on flying, hopefully this weekend.
Pending weather.
Depending on the weather. Weather's looking good. I'm a little worried about the clouds, so as long as the clouds play nice. If not, I'll just do pattern work. I have the plane. I plan on using it.
Good for you.
So your girlfriend's your first victim, right?
Yeah, girlfriend's the first victim. Mother's the second. I have both weekends already scheduled. So I'm taking up the girlfriend. We're going up to Chester County, I believe. It's in Coatesville. Somebody on Twitter recommended it. So they have pretty good food, so I figured I'll go there. Taking my mom down to Cambridge, which I actually did that. My first solo cross country was to there, so that's a pretty easy flight. My both of them are a little nervous. But I did find out my girlfriend's a little excited and nervous, which is good to hear.
Nervous.
I like that there's a little bit of excitement there. So I think she'll be fine. She's never been up in anything other than a commercial flight, so she's a little worried. And she's like, oh, my sinuses sometimes hurt when we're descending. I'm like, first of all, we don't go up to 8,000 feet, which is what the airline cabin will go up to, essentially. And, you know, if it starts hurting, let me know. I can fix it. You know, it's not like when you're in an airline, you can't control how they're descending.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm hoping that she'll be pretty comfortable just being able to see everything that's going on, see what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince my wife that it's the best seat in the house. I've been pretty unsuccessful so far. I was thinking about having my instructor Jackie do a little pinch hitter course and just pay and have her take Michelle up and you know, let Michelle take the controls if she wants to, you know, and with me not in the plane, you know, see if that helps at all.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If Lindsay likes going up with me, she ends up like actually enjoying it. I may try to talk her into doing that with an instructor, but before that, yeah. I just want to take the both of them up, see how they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think my mom may actually somewhat enjoy it. She's still really nervous right now, but I think when she sees everything and sees how it all works and everything, I think she'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope she does.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, you know, the nervousness and will turn to just, you know, smiles and grins in the cockpit after you get up and leveled out and everything's just, you know, nice, good scenery.
Yeah. And the fact that we'll be able to make it to Cambridge in 30 minutes versus the 2.5 hours it usually takes her. So, you know.
Yeah, speaking of that, I was talking to my wife. You know, we're still talking about, you know, how much this is costing, and you know, she still sees no point in it. You know, blah blah blah. You know, I'm like, you know, well, where are you gonna go? You know. Where are you going to go now? I'm like, where the hell you want to go now? You know? I'm like, maybe we go up and visit my aunt. She lives just outside of Albuquerque, in Placidas, New Mexico. She goes, okay, how far is that? So I look it up. I said, it says it's 280 some miles roughly, in a straight line. Okay. How long does that take to get there? And you know, 125 knots, you know, I don't know. Maybe
2 hours.
2.5 hours the most. All right, well, how much does that cost? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, so we figured it all out. Well, you can just get on a plane from Southwest and fly round trip for like $100 or whatever. I'm like, yeah, so you spend about $125 more, but I can still get there faster than Southwest because I can get to the airport and be in the air and to Flagstaff before you're through TSA. And then you're going to sit in the airport for another hour because you got to be there an hour, hour and a half early, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'll almost be to New Mexico before their wheels up. You know, she goes, yeah, so maybe it's a little faster, but so much more money. You know, everything comes down to the money.
Yeah.
But I don't know. One day we'll get over it or we won't. I don't know. And we don't even have a money situation. So, I mean, I didn't start doing this until she got her job, and I'm not using any money from my day job at IBM or her day job as a nurse to do this. It's all side money. So we'll see. I just hate, you know, having this conversation every, you know, 3 or 4 weeks or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I
and her best friend is a lady she went to school with for nursing, whose husband is the pilot that I go fly with once in a while, Dean, who I talk about with the Cessna 140. So, of course, Sally's on my side all the time about it, but it doesn't seem to be helping. I don't know. Hopefully it works out.
Yeah, I'm just not going to tell anybody family-wise how much it actually cost me to get my license. Because I tallied it all up. I still have all the receipts from all the flights, and it wasn't cheap for me.
No, I remember that number.
But with the, you know, I mean, that was with the hiatus and having to do the maneuvers pre-solo like 3 times.
Yeah, yeah.
For different instructors, you know. So
speaking of cost, what was it again for the DPE charged? Was it $400?
It's $400 plus the plane for that day.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how much the plane cost me. I can tell you in a minute. Cost me $277.61 for the plane that day, right? Oh, that date's wrong. That's why. Hang on, let me fix that. So, yeah, that whole day cost me $677.61.
Yeah, that will be a pricey day for sure.
But you know, not too bad. I mean, the funny thing is too, as I looked at I did an hour and a half solo time, that cost me $231.35.
Yeah. What's your plane rental wet? $125?
$145.50.
$145.50? Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So I may get checked out in the Diamond.
A DA-40?
It's a DA-20, actually. DA-20,
okay.
And that rents for $110.
Oh, nice.
I also found out I can rent for almost the same price as what I pay now. They have a Archer.
There you go.
I may
join the low wing club.
That's right. You'll never go back.
I do want to fly a low wing, so I may get checked out in the Diamond first. But they also have a Piper Aero.
So now
complex.
Now you got retracts.
Complex, yeah.
Yeah. Retracts.
And then they have a Seneca
adjustable prop. Twin.
See, I'm.
That's
I can go.
That's not a checkout. That's an that's a complete endorsement.
That's a whole whole new challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I won't. The only thing I may do soon is get checked out in the Diamond. I haven't decided if I'm going to do that yet.
I think my first thing after getting my license, my ticket, would be to start to go get the tailwheel. I think I'm going to jump on that right away. But unfortunately, as far as I know, I think I got to go all the way, got to go over to Chandler or Falcon Field for that. I can't believe no one at Deer Valley, the largest GA airport in the freaking country. I don't know about largest as far as size, but there is several, there's thousands of planes there. No one's, you know, teaching tailwheel, but as far as I know, everybody tells me it's Falcon Field or Chandler.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Not really.
So you guys started a segue, and I was holding off to ask John this, but so now that you've got your ticket, and after you have the girlfriend and the mom flight, what's next for you?
I tell you, that's a good question. Because I had a moment, you know, that, you know, I get back out to the flight school after whole check ride thing. You know, the examiner's sitting there, you know, he hands me the paper, we sign it and all that stuff. I get my temporary certificate, you know, we kind of talk for a little bit, and then he leaves, my instructor leaves, and I'm there with a couple other guys, and you know, we're just kind of standing there, and I'm just like, well, huh, now what? So, you know, I kind of left there, and I was just like, I don't know. Like, it was just a really weird feeling, and I've been thinking a lot about it now, and I honestly don't know. I'd like to get the complex, and I can rent the complex for $10 more an hour than what I do now. Which honestly isn't that bad, but I don't think I'm going to do that right away. I'd like to get the tailwheel. I want to do aerobatics. I want to do all kinds of stuff. I just don't know what order I want to do it in.
Yeah, I want to get that tailwheel out of the way, rent it a number of times to where, you know, by the time, and the same thing with the complex, like an aero, same thing. Get enough hours rental under one of those as well as the tailwheel that if and when I stumble across the right deal as a partnership with somebody, you know that the insurance isn't going to kill us. I want to be able to have the time under there that that they aren't going to drill me on the insurance. I keep talking about that like that's like the number one thing that's a stickler for me, but it really is. You know, I don't want to get screwed on the insurance, you know, because I, you know, don't have 10 hours or whatever when that's not really a big deal. It's cheap enough just to go, you know, rent the plane a number of times to get that knocked out, I think.
Yeah. I think my plan for now is just to, you know, take some trips, do some $100 hamburgers, get some time, just find people around. There, I have a lot of people that want to go up with me, so I'm going to do that, pay off the training. You know, because I got about half of it to pay off. And just kind of fly around for a while. Because, you know, I'm not quite at the point where I think I can get a partnership up here or anything like that yet. I'd love to. I just don't think it's going to happen, at least for a couple of years. So I'd like to get something that's IFR rated and then do my IFR rating in that. That's what I'd like to do, but we'll see how it goes. But I think for now, just $100 hamburgers, taking people up for flights and just kind of flying around, build some time.
Very cool.
That should work. Speaking of finding the right, club to join or whatever, there's a website that I joined quite a long time ago, and I'm trying to find it now as we speak, and I'm not finding it. But basically, you sign up for your area, you know, where you live or whatever, and you keep getting updates all the time about, you know, people that signed up that live in that area that are looking to form a partnership for a plane.
I know what you're talking about. Hang on. Aircraft Partnership Association.
Yeah. Yep, APA. Yep,
the Aircraft Partnership Association.
That's it. I suggest anyone who plans on looking into something like that, it's pretty good. I get it seems like a couple a week or so of people looking for either someone left a partnership so there's a spot open, or maybe it's a person just like me who, you know, don't own a plane but is looking to get two or three guys together to get a partnership put together, you know, anything and everything. You know, it might be a group that has three or four planes, you know, and they just, you know, they have 10 or 15 members, whatever, but it's a decent way to find something out there that you didn't know was available, I guess, because those things are kind of hard to come by. It seems like word of mouth almost, and whatever you see, you know, stapled to the bulletin board at the FBO.
Well, I'd like to thank you all for listening to Episode 8 Alpha of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with, the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
Find this and other great shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
TheVoicesInYourHead.com.